Finally, the release of the long-awaited Operation Mindcrime 2. When did you begin the idea of putting a sequel together for that record?
Well, originally, you know, we had planned on following Operation Mindcrime, the original, with a sequel after the Empire album. And it's funny how things, as you go along, you think you have a plan in mind, and all the pieces change. And we had such a commercial success, you know, with Empire that. And we were on the road for 2 years straight, and it really changed all our lives quite considerably after that record. And I felt we needed to write a record about those changes that we experienced. So we came out with Promised Land, and the Mindcrime albums kind of kept getting pushed back. I started the story back then and kept it on my computer as a file I called Nikki, and kept going back and forth to it over the years and adding and subtracting to it. And one day, about 2 years ago, I was reading through all my notes and realized that I finally had a conclusion. So we began talking about it at that time, actually seriously, you know, creating the record.
Was there a lot of lyric lines or melody lines that were written back after the first Mindcrime that just kind of stuck around and you ended up using on the new record?
No, not from a musical standpoint. It was more of a story standpoint. You know, we always start with the story first. And then we write the music and the lyrics based upon the story.
Do you think the first Mindcrime was just a natural progression from albums like The Warning and Rage for Order, or did you strive to do something kind of radically different at that time?
Well, we wanted to, for years, work with themes. And, you know, I was very much into, you know, concept records from the 60s and the 70s. I grew up in that period of time. And I wanted to do, you know, something like Close to the Edge or... you know, Tommy or something in the realms of that. And we've been kind of working with themes a little bit with Rage for Order, and The Warning was kind of a loose theme idea. But Mindcrime was where we really finally did it. You know, we finally brought all the elements of music and story together to make, you know, one piece.
Before we showcase a whole lot of songs off the new album, I'd like to talk to you just about a couple of older songs. One of my favorites being Screaming in Digital off Rage for Order.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
How did that one come about?
Well, that was a sequel to a song that was on The Warning called NM156.
Right.
So it was inspired from that.
That was kind of a radically different arrangement-wise than anything you guys had done before.
Musically, yeah.
Yeah,
we kind of took that one out in left field a little bit.
Was that something you were striving for, or it just kind of came out that way?
Oh, yeah. Well, with that record, Rage for Order, we were, you know... striving to create an industrial element to what we were doing, using you know, actually everyday sounds and things that you'd get from, you know, perhaps walking down the street with a tape recorder, trying to make music using non-musical sounds. That was really sort of one of our platforms of experimentation with that record.
Do your feelings towards albums like Rage for Order and The Warning change over time, like maybe when you go back and revisit them after not hearing them for a while?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's that way with every record, you know. I usually don't listen to them after they're finished for quite a while. And then I let all my... Because I'm hearing things that I didn't quite get to or didn't do well enough in my mind, or little things that... Anomalies that happened during the recording that ended up being in the mix that would tend to distract me, I guess, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so after some time goes by, it's always... you know, better for me to listen to the record and think, oh, wow, yeah, I like that a lot. You know, you kind of hear it from a different perspective, with different ears.
Did you expect the first Mindcrime record to become as popular as it was?
No. I kind of try to live life with as few expectations as possible. That way I'm not disappointed.
So when you were making that record, you really didn't have an idea that it would really become just such a classic album?
No, not at all. I'm glad that you know, so many people have embraced the story, and it's really resonated with millions of people, you know, around the world, not just here in America, but you know, elsewhere as well.
So when did you begin writing lyrics for the new Mindcrime 2? When did you take the storylines that you've been working on for many years and actually start putting down concrete lyrics?
I guess it was about probably 2 years ago when we started the process.
Was the purpose of going out on the road and doing Mindcrime during your last tour kind of just to get you back in the swing of things as far as the storyline goes?
Absolutely.
get your guitars up to speed.
It was kind of a way for us to refamiliarize ourselves with, you know, the musical direction and the story and just the general spirit of the record, you know. You know, as a musician, you're always thinking about the next thing you're doing, you know, and for us, especially, we don't usually look back. We're always on to the next thing. And so this was a project that's really, really different than what we've ever done before, because we've had to go back, you know, and listen to what we did before and try to create a soundscape that matched the original somewhat, but also sounded like it was set, you know, in contemporary times as well. It was quite a challenge to do that. And so we felt that the best way we could, you know, get in the spirit of it, understand it, that kind of thing, is really to play the whole album and perform it, so it became part of our way of thinking.
Were you still writing the new record when you were on tour?
Yeah, we were.
Did you do any writing, like during sound check, and put any ideas together when you were just kind of practicing around there?
Oh, yeah, we do a lot of that kind of stuff, you know, backstage. We usually bring studios with us, portable studios, and we actually recorded some of this record on tour buses and then backstage dressing rooms on the tour.
So some of the actual tracks you used on the album were recorded while you were on the road?
That's right.
Wow, that's wild. That's something not a lot of bands do.
That's the beauty of, you know, new technology.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we even emailed ourselves performances and things like that, too.
That kind of brings me to my next point. Some of the production elements and sonically, the new record is very similar to what Mindcrime 1 was. Was that difficult to do 18 years later with such a change in technology?
Yeah, it was, on a couple of different levels. We always are trying to make better sounding records based upon our opinion of what's better, you know. And this record is a bit of a throwback because it's, like I said earlier, we're trying to create a soundscape, which is, you know, where this the story comes from. You know, it's a street punk kid, and it's not highbrow stuff at all. You know, it's pretty gritty industrial kind of world. You know, and so we try to keep it in those realms and not let it become, you know, super state of the art. You know,
how did Ronnie James Dio become involved in the project?
I called him out of the blue. I'd written the song "The Chase," you know, for the two singers to sing. It was, you know, where Nikki and Dr. X have their first confrontation, and I wanted the confrontation to be, in a musical sense, a dialogue between, you know, two vocalists, and designed it in sort of the opera style of duet. And when I got finished writing it, I was sitting there sort of resting on my laurels, congratulating myself on how clever I was, and then realized that, oh, damn, who's going to sing this part? You know, I can't just sing it with myself, you know? So immediately, Ronnie's name just popped into my head. And I think it's because I sort of associate Ronnie's voice with this character, Dr. X, you know, because Ronnie's older than me. He has a really commanding, authoritative, elegant sort of presentation that's, a bit sinister, you know? So I hit speed dial, called him up, and said, "Hey, I'm working on this song for Mindcrime, and would you be interested?" And he was very intrigued, you know, and after he heard the song, he was sold and wanted to be involved with it, and we were very honored to have him on the record.
Had you known him and toured with him before?
I have, yeah. He actually offered us the first tour that Queensryche did of Europe. We were his special guests on a massively extensive tour, like 66 dates, and that really helped, cement Queensryche into the minds of the Europeans, you know, as a touring act.
I saw you guys your very first time you were in Cleveland. I think it was with Twisted Sister.
Yeah, uh-huh.
You played at a VFW hall, I think.
Yeah.
That was, I think that was even before the EP came out.
Were you there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, cool.
Been a fan ever since, actually.
I remember that show, actually.
Actually, I think Queensryche was the first band that MTV turned me onto when they were playing the Queen of the Reich video.
Oh, is that right?
What do you think when you go back and view an old video like Queen of the Reich?
I can't watch it all the way through. it's pretty, it's kind of like going back and looking at old home movies of yourself, you know, or your yearbook picture at high school, you know, something like that.
Jason Slater was not only a co-producer of the new record, but he also gets writing credit on a lot of the songs.
Uh-huh.
Is that something you had done before, actually, doing some writing with your producer?
No, this was kind of a first time thing with us. Well, you know, I can't say that. Well, yeah, I can. It's actually the first time. Neil Kernan on Rage for Order is a very talented musician, but he didn't actually write any particular song or section of a song, but he would add, you know, melody ideas here and there or rhythmic ideas, you know, to an already existing written part. But, yeah, just between, you know, his involvement with Rage, it's quite different than Jason, who actually wrote, you know, song sections with Stone. They were co-writers together on quite a few of the songs.
So that didn't just kind of happen in the studio where he added some arrangements? That was, he was actually involved in the writing process?
Yeah. Well, Jason's a very, very talented musician and a talented recording engineer as well. And, man, what a great guy to work with in the studio, just completely filled with ideas and enthusiasm and very, very creative.
Sonically, the record sounds great. I mean, it's just a really energetic mix. I really like it a lot.
Oh, thanks.
What made you feel that the time was right to revisit the Mindcrime story 18 years later?
Well, a few things. You know, finally getting the story done, you know, was a definite motivator in actually making the record. You know, it's been the record has been, you know, a constant fan favorite, you know, for years and years and years. People are always asking us, you know, when are you going to, you know, do the sequel to Mindcrime, and what happened to Mary, and, you know, all the questions. It happens, you know, every tour, every year. And, you know, when I read the new story, the conclusion, to my wife, she said, I think you got a story here. I think you should make the record and, you know, get off your ass and give the fans what they want. So, you know, I took her advice. And then as we started making the record, I started realizing that, you know, the times that we're living in right now in America are very similar to the times, what they were like, you know, when the first Mindcrime came out. And a lot of similarities between, you know, a political situation here, economics, what they are, you know, we're at war with a foreign country, you know, so many similarities that all those things sort of pointed me in this direction that, you know, this is the time to release this record now.
One Foot in Hell is another favorite of mine off the record. Anything to say about that song?
You like that one?
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Oh. Well, yeah, that was a really fun song to do. That's one that was one of the first songs we wrote for the record. We're looking for, you know, kind of a big strutting kind of song, you know, Nicky getting out of jail and he's, you know, going back to his old neighborhood and he's feeling kind of like the cock of the walk here, you know, and that Stone came up with that riff and we just jumped on it and wrote it to the beach.
I'm American was a great choice for the first single, really a powerful way to open up the CD musically. When you're writing an album, do you keep in mind or I should say, do you try and write songs, or at least one song on each record that is kind of radio-friendly with hopes of getting airplay?
Well, we write that way normally. You know, we're song craftsmen, you know, and we're always looking for a great melody and a great riff and something that's going to connect our idea with people, you know. And whether, you know, I don't know, some songs end up as singles on the radio, but that's really not anything to do with us. It's more the record company and management get together and they sort of arbitrarily decide by playing different songs off the record, you know, to radio programmers, and they decide, you know, what's a song that they can all get behind and put out as a single. But as far as the band goes, we don't really have much to do with that.
Chris DeGarmo came back into the fold briefly in 2003. Was there much discussion on bringing him in for Mindcrime 2?
Well, you know, Chris is, you know, he left the band almost 10 years ago, and, you know, the rest of us have kind of struggled to, you know, find our musicality, you know, without him and get along without him. He was a very big part of Queensryche and how we worked, you know, a very, very talented songwriter and music writer and organizer and leader. And, so with his absence, it really crippled us quite a bit. And, in the last few years, since Mike Stone has joined, we've really healed and been able to stand on our own, I think, as writers. And so we felt that, you know, we felt we had a good team, you know, without Chris involved, and we felt we could make this musical statement on our own. And I think it worked out well because, you know, Chris is involved with a different lifestyle now. He's a pilot, flies airplanes, and he could only really do Queensryche as a hobby, you know. And we felt we really needed somebody that was going to dedicate their life and their time to the project and not just be here kind of as a part-time thing.
One of the great things I like about the new record is that even though there's a lot of elements that sonically are similar to the first Mindcrime, stylistically the songs seem like they're a lot different. Was that something you strived to do when you were putting this record together?
Yeah. You know, we wanted to, you know, make a musical statement with this record of, a project that's definitely standing in contemporary times, you know. And this is Queensryche, you know, 2006.
One song that definitely stands out as being radically different from anything on the first Mindcrime is the track Murderer. Anything to say about that one?
Well, yeah, that was a real work, that one. That one's probably the toughest song I've ever sang that Queensryche has performed. It's really, it has a very tricky time signature rhythm to it that changes like every other measure. And it took me quite a while to be able to feel comfortable singing. And even though I wrote the part, you know, I still had trouble performing it with any kind of convincing reality to it. So that one, I'm looking forward to playing that one live because it's really going to be something.
On this next tour, you're going to do both Mindcrimes in their entirety?
That's right. Yep.
How will you do the song The Chase with the Dio in it?
Well, we have Ronnie taped on his performance.
Oh, cool.
And we videotaped him, and we have his audio. And he is going to be Dr. X is portrayed by an actor on stage, and we're going to use our film screens to work their magic and have, you know, an image of Dr. X doing what he's doing during the song and Ronnie's face morphing in and out on the screens as well. But for some select shows, Ronnie's agreed to come out and he hasn't agreed yet to come out and perform with us. We're trying to work out our schedule, so maybe.
Oh, that would be great. I hope Cleveland's one of those dates.
Me too.
Well, it really has been a pleasure talking to you. I do really appreciate the time. I love the new record, and I wish you all the success in the world with it.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you. I'll turn this into an hour-long special of the band, and I think I'm going to do it Friday night on the show. So.
Oh, excellent.
Great. Thanks so much for your time.
You bet. Appreciate it.
Have a great day. Bye.